former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network here on this Saturday morning. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. I'm hanging out here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Fun first hour. We have a fun second hour on deck. 15 minutes from now, Howard Eskin of 94 WIP in Philadelphia will join us. We'll break down Sunday Night Football, Dolphins, Eagles, a battle of 5-1 teams. We're not saying game of the year, Michael. We cannot say that because the last two games we've said that about, they've been blowouts. So we want this to be a good game. So we're not going to say game of the year. We'll just say hopefully it's a good game Sunday evening. And then also 30 minutes from now, Matt Eumanns, the host of VSiN Tonight and also co-host of the College Football Betting Podcast, will join us in studio for his usual spot, giving out his NFL and college football card. But let's get to the Lombardi look ahead. And the game that you have circled as a game that you want no parts of happens to be in our producer's old neck of the woods.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote this Friday morning early, and we didn't know where Deshaun Watson was, and you know, and we didn't know if PJ Walker was going to start. And definitely when you look at Gardner Minshew's numbers, you want no parts. I hate to say this to you, Elliot, you want no parts of the Colts in this game, even though they're playing at home. I mean, Minshew's 2-11 straight up in his last 13 games. He's 2-10 against the spread. You want to bet him? Go ahead. God bless you. I don't. So for me, it was like, okay, I get this. This is a tough one. And then you add in the greatness of this Browns defense. Think about this, Femi. Mm-hmm. The Browns have only given up 200 yards passing in one game this year. That was against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which they had a 71-yard completion. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm. The Pickens.
And so, like, you can't throw the ball on this team. They've only given up 32 first downs over the last 2 weeks. It's hard to throw the ball on them. It's hard to convert third downs. The Colts' offensive line is beat up, right? There's a lot of things going for in favor of the Browns, yet there was a lot of professional people that loved the Colts. I didn't see it. So for me, I made it in a Hall & Oates play because it's like, okay, I respect the professionals, but I also respect my ability to evaluate football teams, and I don't see where the Colts score 14 points. I don't see where they get 17. And I think the Browns, if they just are able to run the football effectively like they did last week for 160 yards against a good 49er front, they can win the game.
So Browns-Colts is the official Hall & Oates play of the week.
But I can't go for that. No can do.
You know, I love it.
You know, to follow up more on that, Michael, is that early in the week, I was finding myself on the side of the professionals and looking at Indianapolis. But the more that we progressed this week, the more I hate the play. Now, I put a small bet in at +3, and I thought that maybe we'd be seeing PJ Walker once again in this game because we saw the report last week of the multiple more games Deshaun Watson could miss. Sounds like he's doing all right. So he's going to probably start in this game, listed as questionable. So I guess things could change, but it looks like we're headed towards Watson playing. I think the side where the professionals and the angle that they're playing here is sort of fading teams off of like big performances. And we've kind of seen that so far. That's been an underlying theme this season. I mean, think about how we saw Buffalo after they beat Miami. Everyone's raving about the Buffalo Bills. They go to London. They lose outright to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Everyone's raving last week about the 49ers destroying the Dallas Cowboys. They go into Cleveland. Game obviously could have gone either way, but they lose the game outright as a 9-point favorite. I think this is because a lot of this week has been about this Browns defense and how good they are, the job Jim Schwartz has done. Maybe they're riding a little bit too high, going from 9.5-point home dog to now laying 3, 3.5 on the road. I think that's the angle that the professionals are playing. I don't like it as much anymore seeing the injury report play as how it has, but hey, we have the bet in. We got to see what happens on Sunday, but I think that's the angle that they're playing.
You know, starting on Monday, I keep track of the line, right? So the line opens up in this game. It opened up at 2.5, and it went right away down towards Indy. It got to 2, and then there were some 1.5s. And they stayed 1.5, and then it moved back to 2. And then once the Watson interview came through, maybe I am, maybe I'm not, you know, it moved. And then when people saw him throwing the football, it moved to 3, and now it's 3.5. I would not be surprised if it got to 4 on Sunday tomorrow. I really wouldn't. Because when you sit down and break down the game, you ask yourself the fundamental question, how do the Colts score? So what happened last week against Jacksonville, who does not have as good a defense as the Browns do? Jacksonville said, play tight man-to-man. We're going to pressure Minshew inside. We're going to force to, we're going to take away his rhythm throws. We're not going to give him some easy throws. And we're going to make him have to throw the football to beat us because we're going to play a certain front that is very difficult to run the ball on. We'll take it to Schwartz, who's impossible to run the ball on his team, right? And they have three corners that are much better than the three receivers for the Colts. So, like, where do they get their offense from a scheme standpoint? I get what you're saying, Femi. There's a lot of that. This is a pick based on the schedule, not a pick based on the matchups.
Yeah.
Which is where I have some issue when I do handicapping, because I always are just constantly thinking of the matchups of the teams. I never get into the handicapping of the situations as professional bettors do, which I obviously need to work on. So, but for me, I just can't see the Colts scoring more than 17 points.
Unless
Watson starts fumbling the ball.
And that's the thing. Like, what percentage is Deshaun Watson? I think that's why it's a perfect game for the Hall of Notes. I wish I didn't have a bet in the game, but you can't correct that. It's already in there. So we got to see what happens tomorrow. Maybe I get lucky and the Colts win this thing. But I think had I gotten a mulligan, I think I'd just lay off of this game in general. Just I don't think I'd want to bet Cleveland off of last week's performance. But I don't really like where we're sitting with the Colts here as we progress through the week. All right, let's get to the line of the week, the game that you really have your eye on. And that's at Arrowhead Stadium, Chargers Chiefs.
Well, look, when this line came out and I saw it was 5.5 or 6, I was shocked because I know that in the matchups, these are always close games. I mean, the Chargers went in there and won a game by 6 in overtime. They should have won it in regulation. They messed around and lost, and they do, you know. And then the Chiefs won in Los Angeles by 6 in overtime, okay? And so the final margin of these games, when it's been Herbert in his seventh career starter, 3-3, 6-6, and 3. So this 5.5 or 6 number didn't seem to make a lot of sense. And then when you peel back the layer and you realize that Herbert's 5-1 against the spread against this Chiefs team. Now, I get the Chiefs are playing better than they ever have on defense, but Herbert needs to play better too. He did not play well last week. I think his finger affected him, which is why I think this line has gone up a little more than it should. I think this line should be around 3-3.5. If you're getting really good value at 5.5, I have it as a closer game than that. So for me, I didn't understand it. You know, I do realize the Chargers don't play well in the second half. I know that, you know, that they give up too many, you know, they've been outscored in the second half way too much this year, and they don't win a lot of close games. I mean, last year they were outscored in the second half 189-141, and they made a playoffs. But this is a typical time when I think that Staley's team, no fan, plays well. And I'm shocked at it. Now, I know everybody said, well, Andy Reid coming off a bye and Mahomes. Well, we know Mahomes is a favorite, especially over a field goal, isn't a great play.
Yeah, I mean, because the Chiefs are always big favorites to where it's hard to cover those numbers in a league where teams are pretty close together. And this is, I think you've identified a really good spot here for the Chargers, because like this is typically when they're getting a lot of points when you want to back them, because they have an awesome quarterback in Justin Herbert. Despite what we saw Monday night, like that's not Herbert. Like he was missing wide open guys. We would have to see a lot more of that before I change my opinion on Justin Herbert. But he's a really good quarterback. He's getting 5.5 in this spot. Obviously, you wish that you could get 6, because that 6 being a key number in the NFL, but there's a reason why you're not getting it, because I think that the Chargers are actually the side here in this game. And you got to kind of have to plug your nose.
Everybody's playing the Chargers, but the number's not moving, which tells you what you need to know, right?
Yeah,
that also kind of almost a little bit like it does. But here, and everybody wants to count on this rest, right? You know, the Chargers, you know, Andy Reid getting rest. Well, when you look at the rest numbers and you study that and you break that down through, you know, our Bet Labs system, right? I mean, with 8 days rest, Andy Reid over the last 20 years is 57-25 straight up. But when you add this, when you add the spread in there, he's 11 games over 500 with a tie. When you look at Mahomes on extended rest, beautiful. He's 13-1, but he's 7-7 against the spread. So I think what you have to kind of do is you got to peel it back a little bit. And like, these are always tight games. These are always tight games. Now I get the handicap that I may have to be really careful of is how good are the Chiefs defensively? We saw the Jets move the ball on them. We did. You can't deny it. I mean, they did. Now this Charger offense, here's the biggest problem with this Charger offense that I see. They have the ball 28, 30 minutes. They're only 38% on third down. Last year, they controlled the ball for 30 minutes, right? And they were much better on third down. So for all the conversation about your guy Joystick, they're not really, the numbers don't translate to them being this incredible offense.
Yeah. We got about 90 seconds left. Let's get to your coordinator battle of the week. And the spotlight is on Sunday Night Football, Dolphins-Eagles.
What I don't think people realize is Vic Fangio was working for Philly last year. Working for Philly in the capacity of explaining the defensive concepts to the offensive coaches. Valuable thing to do. And he obviously would help out the defensive coaches too. He was in Miami or wherever he has a second home down there in South Florida, and he was helping them. So he knows this offense really well. And he also knows when you break down this game that if Hurts is under pressure and you can attack the pocket, it's a little bit of a different situation. And if you, and when he plays against a team that can score points, it is not very good. They're 7-10 against a team that averages over 24 points a game, straight up. So wow. When they get into a track meet, you think it favors them, but it really doesn't. The key, and I think Vic knows this, is the key is to pressure Hurts. And with Lane Johnson, he's going to play. Cam Jurgens isn't going to play. Maybe there's an opportunity to pressure him inside. Look, I don't like Miami either here, because I think when Tua gets pressure inside, that falls apart.
Well, maybe with the wind, maybe you like the under. We're sitting here at 51.5.
I like the wind. I like Philly because of the wind. I think that's tilted me to Philly the most.
Yeah, it's like Tua with the wind and also the interior of the Philadelphia Eagles defensive line. I think I would lean towards the Eagles as well. No bet for me. We'll ask our next guest about this game. Howard Eskin of 94 WIP in Philly joins us here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time of the year to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120, including daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus our exclusive betting content for the MLB playoffs, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, and the NFL draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. To sign up now. Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line, hanging out on DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Matt Eumanns will be joining us in studio next segment to break down his college football and NFL card. But joining us now to talk Dolphins Eagles Sunday Night Football, it's the one and only Howard Eskin of 94 WIP, Eagles reporter, also contributor to Fox 29 out there in the city of brotherly love. Howard, hope all is well. We appreciate you joining us this morning. I want to, before we get to Sunday Night Football, go back to last week. Eagles suffering their first loss to the New York Jets. Was that just kind of a blip on the radar, or was that sort of that loss kind of giving us a little bit of some of the weaknesses coming to the surface for this Eagles team?
Well, anybody that's covered the NFL or is Mike knows, been in the NFL, you always lose to teams you're not supposed to lose to. I don't know. Is there a reason why? I don't know. Did they take it for granted? Well, turnovers were a big part of it. Yeah, I think it was a blip because the Eagles have not been playing at the same level they did last year. Well, last year they won 14 games, but they're still a good team. And the Jets' defense, they're not bad, and they're not a bad, they're actually a good defensive team. So they keep themselves in games. But when you have four turnovers and the last one was the killer, obviously thrown in the double coverage by Jalen Hurts, you're not going to win a game. They're not that team. And I think Sunday night, I don't know why, but I think the Eagles, I don't have any question. The Eagles are going to win the game on Sunday night.
Howard, what was the thinking? And I know you're intimately involved with the team. I see you on the sidelines at every game. What was the thinking throwing there on 3rd and 8? Did they not think they could stop Zach Wilson from going 80 yards to beat him?
Well, here's the difference. You said 80 yards. Remember, they would only be if they run the ball on the 3rd and 8. You know, you're talking about the end of the game. If they run the ball and they would have gotten stopped. And then they only have to kick a field goal. Remember, the Jets are only down by 2. So when you're aggressive, and that's what Nick Sirianni is, you try to put the game away right there. Now, the reality is, so if you don't make it, the Jets still have like maybe a minute and 20 seconds left to try to get in position to kick a field goal. Jalen Hurts cannot throw into double coverage. I mean, that was awful. And that when the coaches broke it down, that was the worst throw of the day. You know, the other turnovers were different. So he's trying to win the game, and you get a first down, you win the game. And if it's incomplete, then you still have to stop him from kicking a field goal, but it's not 80 yards. Remember, it's, you only have to kick a field goal in that situation. So you can look at it both ways, and you can take the defense point of view and say, oh, just try to stop him. But I don't know. I don't know how I would look at it. I understand what he tried to do. It's simple to say either just run the ball and stop them. But I don't know if that's the way some coaches, I know all coaches don't approach it that way. So that's the way I know that's the way they looked at it.
We're speaking with Howard Eskin, Eagles sideline reporter, Philadelphia Radio, also 94 WIP, and a contributor to Fox 29. Well, Howard, this game on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins, you mentioned how you are confident that the Eagles will win this football game. Why do you think they have such a big advantage of going up against this 5-1 Dolphins team?
You know, when you look at the numbers and you say, all right, the Dolphins' offense is much better than the Eagles. If you take away that 70-point game, they're about the same. When they scored, what was it? Who did they score 70 points against?
Denver.
Yeah. If you take away that game, which the numbers were just ridiculous, they're really at the same level offensively. So you could say, oh, the Dolphins are a much better offense. The offense are a really good offense. But the Eagles can be too. I just think it's something about playing at home. The fact that they lost last week, I think, will be different. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I think the Eagles are going to get over 30. Just something about the game, and I don't know why. And the number, I always look at those numbers, and I say, you know what, the number's telling me something. Because before the number came out, I said, oh, this might be a pick'em game because the Eagles lost, the Dolphins are playing great. Comes out at, 2.5? And I think today in some places it's up to 3. It looks too easy to take the Dolphins. That's why they call it gambling. It's not that easy.
Howard, talk to us about Lane Johnson. How about Lane Johnson? I know he was, you know, they thought he might miss some time, but now he's not going to. How did he practice, and is he good to go at right tackle?
Yeah, he is. I'm telling you, he is one of the most amazing people mentally and physically. And I think it's been documented that he had some mental issues, but he's come through that. He is as tough as any player, maybe not better than any player, as tough as any player. That's not just an ankle sprain. It's kind of bordering on a high ankle sprain. And we all know that those usually take like 2 or 3 weeks. He's coming back. I remember seeing him after the game last week in a boot. And I says, you going to be all right? He says, I'll be fine. I says, okay. And it's amazing that he's coming back and playing. Yeah, he's going to play. And they obviously need him. They're going to miss the other injury that people are just kind of glossing over. They're going to miss Reed Blankenship at safety. He has done a really nice job for them this year, and he's not going to play. He's got a rib injury, and I think it's a serious rib injury. There's nothing broken there. And I saw him during the week, and you know, he looks fine, but he can't play. I think they're going to miss him more than anything that people are thinking about. But Lane Johnson is so tough. The fact that he played with a groin tear on both sides on the Super Bowl, both sides, not just one. We heard one. It was both left and right side. This guy is amazing, and he's going to play. He's going to be good. I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to be good.
Yeah, a special player. He's been a special player for the Eagles since he arrived there in 2013 out of Oklahoma. Hell of a player, Lane Johnson. Howard, we've got a few minutes left here. I want to kind of get a progress report here on the coordinators, because that was a big storyline for Philadelphia throughout the offseason, losing both coordinators to head coaching jobs in Arizona and Indianapolis, respectively. How have Sean Desai and Brian Johnson done, in your opinion, here so far through 6 games?
Well, first I'll tell you what the fans think. They want to blow up both of them. like they do every coach. It's always the coach's fault. It's never the player's fault. You know, I had a caller on the air, and he says, well, you know, it's Brian Johnson's fault, the offensive coordinator, that Jalen Hurts threw the interception in the double coverage. I said, who threw the pass? I'm trying to figure out what position on the field Brian Johnson's playing. Sometimes you can't just blame the coordinators. Now, it is Shane Steichen did a really nice job. And obviously with Indianapolis, I think he'll have success out there. Jonathan Gannon, he got ripped. Everybody wanted to fire him every week. But they always blame the coaches. One of the coaches said to me, yeah, I know out in Philadelphia, and didn't say it publicly, we suck. Well, that was the word to use. We suck. So, yeah, we'll see on Sunday. So they're very confident. But I think Brian Johnson has done a good job. He's not Shane Steichen yet, but he's worked with Jalen Hurts for years before he even got into the pros. You know, he's been associated with him. And Sean Desai, I think, has done a nice job. He's done a nice job, and he's pretty sharp. And the players are doing a nice job, but it always comes down to the players. Players have to take responsibility, and it's so easy to blame the coach. And fans don't want to blame players. They want to blame the coaches. But I think they've done a good job. But obviously, Brian Johnson, I don't know if he needs to do a better job because they all coordinate what the play calls are going to be. So they're not the two guys that left, but I think they've done a good enough job that the Eagles should be able to win. But it comes down to the players.
Coming down to the players, final question. We have a little under a minute. Where does James Harden play basketball next month?
Is Mars or Jupiter a good place?
I guess.
Is that a name of a club?
You know what? I think he's going to be with the 76ers. And this is the joke of the whole thing. Daryl Morey, their president of basketball operations, is a fraud, and he's a loser, and he's never won anything. He overvalues his players all the time, and he's holding back, and he's just going to hold back. And who knows where James Harden is? He's in Houston now. He hasn't come back for a week. So, but now he's got personal issues that he's got to, so he doesn't get fined. Who knows what's going to happen there? But I think he's going to be on the 76ers roster. You got to just dump his ass. I mean, you just got to dump him and get rid of him. It's no purpose keeping him here. But Mars and Jupiter would be a good place for him.
Well,
love it.
Good luck, Nick Nurse. He is Howard Eskin, 94 WIP, Eagles reporter, Fox 29 as well. Thanks as always, Howard. Matt Youmans joins us next in studio here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out in studio here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. And joining us right now in studio, you see him every single week here on the Lombardi Line in his usual spot. It's our buddy Matt Youmans, host of VSiN Tonight. You can check that out 9 to midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Also co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Matt, thanks for coming in studio this morning, man. We appreciate you as always. Let's start off with Michigan. We were talking about it during the break a little bit. Obviously, this week, the story has been the sign-stealing reports out there. We know the Michigan staff are currently servicing a suspension right now, but you have a play in their game today as they take on the Michigan State Spartans.
Yeah, I think this sign-stealing story is much ado about nothing for the most part. But, you know, the fact that they're trying to paint this as Jim Harbaugh had no idea this was going on. Hey, there's nothing to see here, right? Okay. Of course he knows what's going on. But I don't think this is a controversy. My concern today is whether Harbaugh, when you're handicapping this, whether he wants to really stick it to Michigan State as badly as he possibly can and just prove a point to everybody, give everybody the middle finger and win this game by 40. But really, if you look at the Spartans the last couple weeks, they played much better. especially on the defensive side of the ball against Iowa, against Rutgers. And I've said this about Harbaugh on a few shows this week. He's had a lot of trouble with Michigan State. In 8 meetings, he's 2-5-1 against the spread. He has lost 4 games straight up as a 7-point favorite or more.
Oh.
And, you know, this can be Michigan State Super Bowl because the Spartans are headed nowhere. And I do think this team's shown enough fight that I took 24.5 with the Spartans.
Well, I mean, if they would have played better on special teams last week against Rutgers, yeah. I mean, what, Rutgers scores 21 points in the fourth to kind of come back on them. So, yeah, I kind of agree. One thing I know about Michigan, you know, it's you don't want to play them in the first half because mm-hmm. they always seem like they're in a close game in sure. the first half. Mm-hmm. But then the second half, they just dominate. They just impose their physicality on these opponents, and they cover these huge numbers. I mean, Indiana, right? Indiana was scored first, and next thing you know, it's what, 56-7 or something like that. So I do agree with you. I think that he'll want to, you know, Michigan State has been a thorn in his side, and if he can get it going against them, I definitely think he will. I want to ask you, if you had to pick a team to be in the Final Four that no one's talking about, who would that be? And who is your sleeper Heisman? I've got two people on the program, the guy you're sitting next to, Mr. Femi. And then I had Tim Murray on today, who are uh-huh. Bo Nix guys because of the number. We got to play the number. You know, I want them to give the number to St. Jude's, but they won't do it. So, like, tell me who your sleeper candidate is. And if it's Bo Nix, I'm fine with it. I'll just accept it, but I'll remind everybody.
You know, I actually don't think Bo Nix is a bad bet at, what, about 20-1? Is that what you got? Yeah.
Tim got 30. I mean, I have 30 from September, but
okay. Yeah,
around that range.
He's still in it. He did not play poorly. He's not the reason that Oregon lost that game at Washington last week. And the Ducks still have some big games on the schedule. So I'm not going to laugh at their play there. It's hard for me to say J.J. McCarthy, the Michigan quarterback, is a Heisman-worthy guy right now because the Wolverines have played such a weak schedule. Step up and play somebody. I think Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback at Oklahoma, and Jordan Travis, quarterback at Florida State, are two guys you have to look seriously at because Gabriel's going to get another shot against Texas, you would think, in the Big 12 championship game. And Jordan Travis and Florida State have a relatively clear path to the playoff. And Travis has got those big receivers. And I'm really impressed when I watch the Seminoles offense. And I think those are two sleeper candidates that nobody's really talking about at this point that I would give some credibility to.
We're hanging out with Matt Youmans.
You know, and the kid at LSU, too. If LSU was better, I think Jalen Daniels would win this thing. I really do.
I like Jaden Daniels. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. Unfortunately, LSU's lost a couple games. And the way the Heisman voting goes, if you lose a couple games, you're out of it. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with the philosophy of the way this award's voted on. I think it's kind of a joke. But, you know, we've seen the best player, most outstanding player in college football on an 8-4 team not even get considered because his team lost 4 games, which I think is asinine. But anyway, that's why I think the Heisman's an overhyped award anyway. What was the other part of the question?
What sleeper team do you like? I mean, like, let's take it from today. Mm-hmm. I know you have Alabama and you have USC in a money line. I know you're not a USC guy to win to get in the mm-hmm. Final Four. But do you realistically think Alabama can?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's going to happen. But there is a path there for Alabama to get to the SEC championship game and win it. Because I don't think Georgia's that good. And I've been saying this since the summer. I think Georgia was ranked and power rated based on its reputation and what it did the last 2 years. And I haven't seen it yet this season, so I think there's a possibility Alabama could sneak in there. And I don't think it's going to happen, but it's possible. I think you're going to see one team from the Big Ten, one from the SEC, probably Florida State out of the ACC because of the path the Seminoles have to get there. And then the fourth playoff spot's going to be up for grabs between the Big 12 or the Pac-12. And it's not going to be stunning if the Pac-12 gets shut out. I'm telling you that right now, and I hate to say it, but I'm not going to be stunned if it happens where the Pac-12 gets shut out of the college football playoffs. So who's the sleeper team? I think, oddly enough, Florida State's a team nobody's talking a lot about. You hear everything about the SEC, the Big Ten's being hyped like crazy, and all the teams at the top of the Pac-12. But Florida State's got a pretty solid resume and an offense that you have to respect and a path to the playoff with not much in its way. Look at Florida State's schedule here. At Wake, at Pitt, Miami and Mario Cristobal, give me a break. Northern Alabama, at Florida and Sunbelt Billy. I think that Florida State is going to be a playoff team. So that's probably a team that should be talked about a little bit more.
Yeah, no, it feels like we've kind of put Florida State off to the side since they beat Clemson. That was a dramatic game down there in Death Valley. Mm-hmm. But they haven't played marquee games, so everyone's just sort of forgotten about how this team is top five in the country and undefeated and also beat up LSU pretty bad as well Labor Day weekend.
That's the thing I think nobody should forget about is Florida State outscored LSU 31-0 in the second half, you know, until LSU got that late touchdown.
Yeah. Pretty impressive. You do not have Florida State on your card here today. You do, though, have Texas, who Oklahoma beat a couple weeks ago at Red River. Houston and Texas, an interesting game. Longhorns coming off of the bye after that loss here. How do you see this one playing out?
I think it's going to be a shootout. I played a half a unit on Houston plus 23.5 and a half a unit over the total of 60. And this Houston defense is not going to get a lot of stops. Longhorns had a week off after they lost to Oklahoma. You got to think they're going to come out breathing fire today. But this is a big game for Houston. You know, this is the last shot at the Longhorns in the Big 12. I think the Cougars have actually shown some improvement the past couple weeks. I really like their quarterback, Dominic Smith, who Donovan Smith, I think, right? Is that what it is? First name. He transferred from Texas Tech. Dual threat quarterback who's put up really good numbers, and this Houston offense has improved, even though Dana Holgorsen is one of my least favorite coaches. That's why I kind of split the unit here to kind of cover myself in case Texas puts up 40, you know, 2 or 50 points somewhere in that range. But I think this is a big number for a home dog in a rivalry type of game that means a lot to Houston.
Smith? About Minnesota Iowa? You like Minnesota taking the 3.5. Do you like the under in this game? Because you can't get any lower.
You know, what's interesting is the total was, 31.5 in this game last year, and it was 13-10. So we can laugh about how low the total is, but it's so low for a reason. Michael, you were talking about Michigan State special teams. If you watched the game against Iowa a few weeks ago, that game flipped when the Hawkeyes returned the punt for a touchdown. They were not moving the ball at all offensively. Their quarterback, Deacon Hill, has completed 27 of 70 passes since he took over for Cade McNamara. If you do the math, that's about 36%. It's a joke how bad this Iowa offense is. And I think with a low total, when you got the better quarterback, I got to take the points with the Gophers and PJ Fleck here, even though this is not a game you're going to want to watch. Hide the women and children. This is going to be ugly.
Go do something else with your Saturday.
You know, it's really
afternoon.
Unfair, too. It's really unfair that they put that children's hospital next to the stadium in Iowa City. Yeah. Don't make those kids watch Iowa football. Seriously. Come on.
Utah-USC is a marquee game. Alabama-Tennessee also a marquee game. You look like you want to combine these things with the Bama and SC parlay.
I don't want to lay the points here with Bama or USC, but I think both are pretty good bets to win the game. You got to think that there's a lot of stuff we could talk about with the USC football program and Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams and kind of how soft the Trojans were when they got exposed by Notre Dame a week ago, which did not surprise me that much. But I would think the character of that team is going to be tested, and I expect USC to respond. I also think Alabama should beat up a Tennessee team that's not very good offensively with Joe Milton, the quarterback.
All right. I know you don't have a play in Penn State, Ohio State, but I want to get your thoughts on it on the other side as well as your NFL card. We'll wrap up the show. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets or where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Welcome back. It's the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. We're hanging out with Matt Eumanns here in studio, hanging out with us, giving out his college football card. We'll also get to his NFL card here shortly. But wanted to get your thoughts here on the big game of the day, Penn State, Ohio State, kicking off in about 20 minutes in Columbus. Buckeyes, 4-point favorites pretty much across the board. Total has ticked up, actually. We were at 45.5 to start the show, now 46.5 here. I know you don't have a play in this game, but kind of just your thoughts on the biggest game of the day.
Well, weather is not going to be a factor. You see those shots from Columbus. It's a nice day. Yeah, so
crisp fall day.
Then the public likes to bet the over. I tend to think this is going to be a lower scoring game. You know, unless we have defensive or special team scores, it's probably going to stay under. You've got two relatively inexperienced quarterbacks, Kyle McCord, Drew Allar, the Penn State freshman, who's averaging 6.8 yards per pass attempt. And really, if you look at the numbers, Penn State's not stretching the field vertically at all with the passing game. They don't have the big play receivers they've had in the past. They do have a potentially dominant running game with Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen. Unfortunately, the offensive line is not elite. It's pretty good. It's not great. I think what you're going to see is, again, the Ohio State quarterback, Drew Allar, is going to be a lot like Derek Carr. Check down, check down. This is what he's been doing all season. And Penn State's going to try to run the ball, control the clock. It's going to be a game of field position. And I think both play callers are going to be a little bit conservative because they don't want their young quarterback to blow the game. The defenses are good enough that you don't want your quarterback to lose it. And if you look at the Big Ten right now, the top three scoring defenses in the nation are Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. You know, the Buckeyes played the toughest schedule of those three teams. I tend to think it's going to be a lower scoring game. It's always a little bit of a risky a play when you're talking about a total of 46.5. But I'm leaning towards a 24-17 type of game that Ohio State probably finds a way to win. I think the spot to play Penn State, I like this Penn State team a lot. I think the spot is going to be November 11th when Michigan comes to Happy Valley. I'm going to be playing Penn State probably against Michigan in that game. Mm.
How about the pro card? So, you know, it's kind of an interesting pro card this week, right? I mean, I know you went with the Giants plus the 3, which to me, I think it's a really smart play. I was on Russo on Friday, and it was for some reason it was 2.5, which didn't make sense, but I do like it. My only concern with it is if Tyrod gets hurt, you're looking at a Tommy DeVito game, and I'm not sure that works. But look, Sam Howell is going to get the crap beat out of him, and he's going to face constant pressure from Don Martindale's defense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I don't trust Sam Howell as a 3-point road favorite. To me, he's very inconsistent so far. You put pressure on him, he's going to make mistakes. I think the Giants are going to come after him. Also, on the other side, what concerns me about the Giants is their offensive line is just injury-riddled. It's a patchwork offensive line. But I really like what Tyrod Taylor did Sunday night. He was getting outside the pocket and was making plays. You can say, yeah, it was a 14-9 game. But the Giants had two drives that died at the one-yard line at the end of the first half and at the end of the game. They should have put up more points against the Buffalo defense Sunday night. I don't think the Giants should be full 3-point home dogs here. I took the number thinking that if the Giants defense can put some pressure on Sam Howell, we should be in a pretty good situation here. And it really doesn't matter to me if it's Daniel Jones or Tyrod Taylor. I think I actually kind of prefer Tyrod a little bit. You know, not because he's had more practice time, and he's not coming off an injury, and he looked pretty good against the Bills on Sunday night. He can get outside the pocket, which is what you have to do, too, when you got a weak offensive line in front of you. Michael, I had a question for you and Femi. You can check in on this. I think, you know, I've watched the NFL since the 1970s, and I know the popularity of the league is peaking right now, but I think a lot of that has to do with fantasy football and betting and some of the other factors that people, you know, when there's a big NFL game on Thursday night or Monday night, the sports book just fills up here.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a baseball playoff game, nobody cares. So, yeah, the NFL is still king. But, Michael, when I look at the offensive line play, the quarterbacks, some of the coaching, and foremost for me, the officiating. I think this game is over-officiated now to the point where every time there's a big play, you're looking at the screen to see if there's a flag, to see if the play is going to count. I think really the product, the on-field product, is about as poor as I can remember that, in my lifetime of watching the NFL. Is that an overreaction, you think, or not?
I think there's elements of truth in that. I think what you see is the fact that the way they've set up the collective bargaining agreement, they've taken away development of offensive and defensive alignment, which hurts the game. You can't have the players in there early. You can't really do a lot of work. And the coaches have no one to blame but themselves. I mean, you know, when I was in Oakland, Gruden would start his quarterback camp in the middle of February. There were no rules. He'd have guys in there and complain that they weren't coming in. You know, it's a long season when you do that. But offensive linemen particularly need to have that. They need to be at the facility starting in February to work on their fundamentals, their techniques. It's become a technique-less league because you have no time to practice. Plus, they've limited practice, one padded practice a week. You can't do it. And they wonder why tackling's so bad.
Yeah.
They wonder why all the things that go into player safety get so bad because nobody practices it. So I do think there's an element of truth. I think the officials have always been like this. There's no consistency from one crew to the next. You really can't. I mean, you know, you got Carl Cheffers is going to do the, you know, he's going to do the Minnesota game on night. You got Brad Allen tomorrow night. You know, I search around. Where's my man Scott Novak? You know, because I don't like playing his games. You know, I worry about him because he, to quote the great Henry Stram, he's an over-officious jerk.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's difficult. He'll be in Seattle. Do that game there. And within the before the clock reaches 13 minutes, he'll be on TV.
How about our guy Sean Hockley? He finds his way on TV as well. He makes sure he gets his fair share of screen
time. That's my biggest point, Femi, is I just think the officials are way too much a part of the game right now. It's just there's no flow to the game. I was at the Patriots-Raiders game last week, and Brent Musburger and I were sitting there watching. There's a flag on every other play. Is this too much?
Yeah. Yeah, it's way too much.
And it's really affected the red zone. Like, you know, they called the holding on the left guard for the Raiders down there in the red zone. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the kid would have made the play, you know, but they call it his arm was outside. I mean, they call things that they're not really worthy of a call.
Right.
You know, when you like the long touchdown run by New England, you know, Hunter Henry got called on that. I mean, he probably did pull. I've seen it not called. The lineman downfield is the interesting call that's happening now. Yep. They're calling that quite a bit. Yep. And that's a good thing because it really makes it hard to play defense the other way.
Yeah, all those RPOs and stuff like that with all the linemen, ineligible linemen downfield.
You know, that was a huge play. I'm glad he brought that up because when I watched the replay of the Hunter Henry penalty that wiped out the Zeke Elliott touchdown, I said, that you don't need to throw a flag on that. You know, there's certain things you can let go. I don't think you had to throw a flag. There's flags thrown on way too many plays where I think the officials just need to look the other way. And it would be better for the flow of the game. And, you know, that's what disappoints me. I think there's just a lot of calls made that you could let go. But the officials, they want to be a big part of the show, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With all this said, though, we're still going to be glued to it every single Sunday.
Of course. No question.
Of course.
I love it.
Let's talk about a game that we hope is a really good one. Detroit against Baltimore. Looks like you're looking to sell high on the Lions here after their 5-1 start.
Yeah, I am playing a Ravens -3. Very popular play last night in the Circa Friday Football Invitational Contest. And I think what you've seen the Lions do is kind of take advantage of some weaker defenses and a weaker schedule recently during, a four-game win streak? And this is probably a tricky spot for the Lions, back-to-back road games after they played the Bucs a week ago. I've got some reasons here why I like the Ravens. I'm not super confident in the play because I typically don't like Baltimore as a home favorite. I think a year ago the Ravens were 1-6 against the spread as home favorites. But I do like the spot better for the Ravens today.
It's trending towards 3.5. The thing I think that what's worrisome is Lamar's dynamic. He's 16-1 straight up against the NFC, but the problem is he didn't cover. And I'm a little bit with you. I stayed away from it. I wasn't going to play it because you can make the argument for either side in this game. And I was worried about Detroit's running game. Gibbs will play, according to Campbell. That's a big help because without Gibbs and without Montgomery, you know, Raymond's not going to be the back that's going to cause many problems for Baltimore.
Yeah,
I think there's a bit of a class difference, too, between the AFC North and the NFC North. And, you know, the Ravens should be a class above the Lions. We'll see.
Yeah, the last four quarterbacks the Lions have played, Desmond Ridder, Jordan Love, Bryce Young, Baker Mayfield.
Not superstar.
Lamar Jackson, a little bit different class than those guys. That does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Thank you to Tim Murray. Thank you to Howard Eskin. Thank you to you, Matt. You've been joining us in studio for two segments here. Thank you to you, Michael. Have fun watching all the games. Good luck to the Phillies. Tell all the people out there it will be okay. Red October is still on. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman.
We need a lot of therapy tonight. Yeah.
Right. Live Bet Saturday is coming up next. Jonathan Von Tobel, Pam Maldonado here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.